Then there's the situation with Earth's oceans today. It's not looking good. 70% of Earth's surface is covered in ocean, mostly liquid water these days, currently pegged at 8.4 billion and growing. Human populations have wreaked havoc on Earth's oceans. Chemical pollution, monumental volumes of plastic, megatons of sediment flooding coastal estuaries. A third of the CO2 humans have pumped into the atmosphere over the course of the last 200 years, burning fossil fuels, has ended up in the oceans, acidifying them. 90% of the excess atmospheric heat that CO2 has trapped has also ended up in the oceans, expanding them. Coastal communities are in peril. Over a third of humanity lives within 100 kilometers of the coast. If Earth's oceans are in trouble, so are humans. But ocean experts are hopeful. Oceans need to be managed more effectively. The GPM spoke with Rafael González Quirós, joint coordinator of a group of ocean experts and co-author of the group's Third World Ocean Assessment that's just been published. We reached Rafael González Quirós in northern Spain. It's astonishing that 90%, well, a third of all the carbon dioxide that humans have put into the atmosphere since the start of the Industrial Revolution, a third of that colossal volume of CO2 has gone into the oceans, which is making the pH go down. It's making the oceans more acidic. And 90% of atmospheric heat is now in the oceans. Just physically, the oceans are astonishing. And we worry about climate change, but there's a whole lot of climate change in the pipeline, and it's largely due to the oceans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the fact is, sometimes we say that the ocean affects the climate, but the correct thing to phrase it is that the ocean is part of the climatic system, as you mentioned, of the Earth. And taking into account that water is able to accumulate much more heat than the atmosphere, and therefore the ocean have accumulated 90% of the excess of heat that we have provoked because of a greenhouse gases release. So the ocean is playing a fundamental role in the dynamics of climate change, not only as a heat, I mean, because of the coupling of the heat content, but also for the role it plays in the carbon cycle. The ocean has absorbed, as you said, 25 to 30% of the CO2 that we have released, but it also plays a very important role on the long-term sequestration of carbon in several ecosystems, and mainly in the open ocean, as what is called the biological pump, which is a series of mechanisms in which plankton are involved, which are, together with terrestrial forests, the main two long-term sequestration fluxes on the global scale.
And our understanding of ocean chemistry is, I mean, it's pretty advanced, but there's a whole lot about ocean chemistry we don't understand, what the impact of that carbon dioxide that's being absorbed is on these geochemical cycles that are going on in the ocean at various levels.
Yes, I mean, the complexity of because it depends on the currents, on the dynamics of the currents, how this is exchanged with the atmosphere. When we are, I mean, the excess of CO2 is just mostly dissolved into the water, but part of it is assimilated by plankton and other organisms. And it is also driven down to the depth of the ocean. Now, ocean acidification is evident at even depths of 2,000 meters, same as the heat as well. So we are transforming the whole chemistry of the ocean. This is, at this time, causing physiological problems or issues on the behavior of species, their survival, and so on. maybe ocean acidification is not yet the major driver of change. It is temperature at the moment caused by climate change. But the problem is that this ocean acidification will be added to the effect of heat. And to some organisms that have carbon calcium structure, it will be a major threat in the future. Another change in the chemistry or the physics also of the ocean is related to the oxygenation, the loss of oxygen in the ocean. The ocean is a huge reservoir of ocean in the planet, and the concentration is decreasing due to two major factors. One is the increase of stratification, ocean stratification that is increasing due to heat, and also because of the decrease of the dissolution capacity of the ocean as temperature increases. In some areas, this also is occurring together with other, like nutrients added to the ocean that are causing what we call eutrophication, which is increasing primary production in certain areas, and this is further consuming oxygen. So that's another problem related with climate change, but also with other anthropogenic factors.
And the rate of sea level rise has doubled over the course of the last, 50 years. And most of that sea level rise is due to thermal expansion because of all the heat that the oceans have absorbed.
Yeah, it's about 50%. It's difficult to say which factor, if expansion or melting of the sea ice and ice in the mountains and in glaciers and so on. But yeah, part of it is because of the expansion of water, which is driven by this increasing heat content that, as I said before, is reaching depths down to 2,000 meters. So yeah, this is really, really a problem that is increasing. It's due to the huge amount of heat that the ocean is absorbing. So part of this sea level rise is due to the expansion of the water.
Can you talk about the key ocean stressors and drivers of change, biologically speaking? How are humans impacting biological diversity of the oceans? And of course, the oceans, we have all these different habitats. We've got coastal habitats, nearshore habitats. We've got estuaries, and then we've got the open ocean. So what, I guess, most of the impact that humans are having on the biological diversity of the oceans is coming from coastal communities. And I what, like 25% of the planet lives within 100 kilometers of the ocean?
Yeah, well, the major driver of change at the moment is climate change through the increase of temperature, marine heat waves, which are increasing and have also doubled in the last years, but also due to sea level rise, deoxygenation, and acidification. But the major impact of this is in coastal areas where this heat increase and sea level rise has a major impact, not as much as in the open ocean, although the open ocean is clearly affected by the increase of heat. But is in coastal areas, which has a major impact. But there, it accumulates, the effect of climate change accumulates with other anthropogenic pressures, such as contamination, plastics, invasive species, which are more often occurring in coastal areas, and so on. So it's, in fact, coastal ecosystems, as you mentioned, estuaries, but also coral reefs and all the shallow ecosystems in the ocean are the ones are mostly affected. And together with the Arctic, which it has also coastal areas, but the Arctic is due to the increase of temperature there, which is larger than anywhere else. It's so are both. But yeah, coastal ecosystems due to the effects of other anthropogenic pressures are mostly affected.
Talk about these pollutants that humans are putting into the oceans. There's a long list of them. I'm particularly interested in pharmaceuticals and personal care products and PFASs, and there's a long list of them. Go through these if you can.
Yeah, well, you know, the chemicals are very complex. I mean, the amount of chemicals are dissolved in the ocean that we have released is very, very large. I mean, the most, like, the classical chemicals were like things like heavy metals, which are accumulated in the trophic food web, and they get more accumulated in the top predators, as you may know. But we have been introducing and we have been discovering other types of chemicals. One of them is plastics. Like, two decades ago, we were not aware of the amount of plastics we were releasing to the ocean. It has become a major problem right now, because plastic do not degrade. They are stable in the ocean for many, many years, and they are incorporated into the food webs, and they cause physiological problems to every other species in the ocean right now. However, we're introducing other components like antibiotics and so on. So we are, in some of these cases, we are beginning to understand their impacts, and yet they are another source, important, very important source of anthropogenic impact, which is particularly focused in certain areas in terms of chemicals, in not all over the ocean, but plastics right now, they are found in every other ecosystem, from the surface to the deepest ocean, even in the deepest trenches, and also in the Antarctic, that is to some extent isolated by the ocean currents, but plastics are present there as well.
Let's talk about the various groups of organisms that are outlined in the Third World Ocean Assessment. There's a bunch of them. They're all fascinating. Let's quickly review them. Plankton. Plankton are organisms that are just floating at the surface of the ocean. What's the impact of humans on plankton?
Well, it's not only at the surface. They go deep to the deepest waters of the ocean. There's plankton on the whole water column, although it's true that most of the biomass is linked to the surface, where primary production occurs. Today, we know very little about what is going on with plankton, because we don't have many time series of data obtained in a systematic way repeatedly. So we have very, very little information about how climate change is affecting. In fact, plankton productivity was supposed to decline, and at the moment we are unable to certify that, probably due to the complexity of the system that we don't fully understand it, but also for the lack of data. But we are affecting plankton in many other ways. For instance, the fires in Australia I don't remember in which year it was, 21 or 22, drove a plankton bloom in the Southern Ocean. So the way we are impacting plankton is very diverse, not only because of temperature, but also because of other drivers, also contamination and plastics, which are incorporated into the food web.
And you went a little bit wobbly there for a second. What you were saying is that fires in Australia did this.
Yeah, wildfires in Australia provoked plankton blooms in the Southern Ocean, so far away from Australia, thousands of kilometers. But due to these that are probably enhanced by human activity or climate change as well.
And those plankton are responding, well, maybe poorly is not the right word, but they're responding to acidification of the ocean.
Yes, there's many plankton organisms like coccolithophorids, which have structures of carbonate calcium, and they are beginning to be affected by acidification. And if the pH decreases to a certain degree, then those structures will dissolve. But right now, it's been more and more difficult for those organisms to produce those structures because of the decrease in pH. So it's another stressor added to all the other stressors that we are putting onto the ocean with temperature, contamination, and so on.
Marine benthic invertebrates, little soft creatures that live on the bottom of the ocean. What impact are humans having on them to the extent that we know?
Well, marine invertebrates is such a diverse group that it's difficult to respond in a simple way, because the effects can be very, very different from one group to another. But for instance, corals are included there, and they are affected by marine heat waves, and the coral bleaching is causing that. But here again, I have to emphasize the fact that we know very little about marine invertebrates. I mean, they make up like 60% of the total of the organisms or species that we know, and only 1.7% of them have been assessed by the International Union for the Conservation of Nature. So still, we know very, very little about biodiversity in general, and this is a very diverse group, and we lack a lot of knowledge about. Even many species will have to be discovered yet. Are yet to be discovered.
Fish populations?
Well, fish populations are, as everybody knows, they're affected by fisheries in areas where fish management is based on scientific data. Then the number of overexploited stocks is very much reduced, but in most of the countries, they lack the capacities to assess the state of those stocks scientifically. So they are also in threat. Another one is again climate change. Climate change is causing the shift in distribution of many fish stocks. And some of them are, for instance, expanding. I mean, not all of them are declining. And for instance, cod. The northeastern Atlantic cod is increasing in the Arctic because the its habitat is increasing in that area. So the population is increasing. But in other areas, and the general pattern is the pattern of decrease in the populations.
Marine mammals?
Marine mammals, again, are threatened by climate change and also by many other anthropogenic pressure, like marine traffic, for instance, in certain areas. And although there has been some good stories about recovery, and everybody knows about the whales when they were banned, the catches of whales were banned many years ago, this has led to a recovery of many of the whale population overall. But some others, and mainly in the Arctic, those marine mammals in the Arctic are really threatened right now because of the changes that are undergoing in that area because of the decrease of sea ice cover and so on.
And marine, I'm just going through your report, marine reptiles. Interesting thing here, it says that increasing sand temperatures seem to be altering a change in the sex ratios of hatchlings skewed towards females because the sands are warming.
Yeah, this is an example how complex climate change, I mean, the complexity of climate change impacts. Here we see a physiological impact on on the females and the development of on the affecting the sex ratio of marine turtles, that is affecting populations, and therefore it can affect the whole ecosystem. So it's another clear example of going from physiology to the level of the ecosystem.
And then, of course, I mean, we're just surveying this quickly. Marine plants. I'm particularly interested in the seagrass and mangrove ecosystems, salt marshes, which are incredibly productive. They are all those salt marshes and coastal plant communities and just not far offshore. They store more carbon than all of the forests on the surface of the planet.
Yeah, they store more carbon per square meter by unit of surface than terrestrial ecosystems. And also, they also hold a very important biodiversity and many services, for instance, for fisheries as recruitment areas, but also preventing the effects or mitigating the effects of climate change. For instance, mangroves are an excellent barrier to decrease sedimentation changes or to hold sediments in an area and preventing sedimentation changes due to climate change and sea level rise and due to the effects of the storm. So are a very important, they play a very, very important role, not only in terms of carbon accumulation, but also in other services like biodiversity and for coastal communities as well. Yeah. And they are, besides many efforts in protecting them, they are still in decline. So we are yet to put more efforts on these very, very valuable ecosystems.
And then on the positive side, I in the seagrass meadow department, a large area covering up to 90,000 square kilometers of seagrass beds was just discovered in the Bahamas. So as things are declining and we're seeing degradation of these systems, at the same time we're discovering all this diversity.
Yes, I mean, we are discovering new areas that are covered because we, as I said in the beginning, we still, we are far from having an accurate knowledge about the ocean. So we are still discovering things like that, like huge areas covered by seagrasses that we didn't know they were existing. So this is also telling us how little we know about the ocean as well, yeah.
And mangroves. I had the good fortune of visiting a number of mangroves in southern Cambodia some years ago, and they are astonishing natural systems that provide coastal protection. They sequester carbon, biological diversity, and there's been lots of mangrove loss over the years. I take note in your report, notable restoration projects for mangroves include the goal of China to restore 20,000 hectares by 2025, Indonesia to restore 600,000 hectares of mangrove by 2024, and an initiative of the Islamic Republic of Iran, to plant 1,000 hectares of mangrove forests. Here's good news coming from Iran.
Yes, there's good news coming from everywhere in terms of mangroves. Although they are still declining, the rate of decline has been ameliorated. I mean, it's not as fast as it was. And I think all over the world will have acknowledged how important this ecosystem is. And there's many, many activities trying to recover, I mean, those ecosystems, which have an extremely important value for all of us at the global scale, yes.
And we talk about, some people talk about going off and exploring the surface of the moon or going to Mars and finding out what's there. But, then we've got the abyssal zones of the ocean, those deep places where vast amounts of biological diversity exist, and we just know nothing, like virtually nothing about the seamounts and the pinnacles and the trenches And unless you're, you know, James Cameron or Jacques Cousteau, who's not around with us anymore, nobody's ever seen those places. And there are all these things down there that appear to be under threat by, you know, undersea cables and, you know, marine structures and mining of nodules and precious metals from the ocean bottom. What's down there?
Well, the answer is, unfortunately, we don't know. I mean, in the first place, only 27% of the seafloor has been mapped at a certain high resolution. So we still don't know, the bathymetry, the basic bathymetry, which is basic in order to understand those ecosystems. Many pinnacles and sea mountains are yet to be discovered. We have the rate of discovery is quite impressive. So many of them are yet to be discovered. And in abyssal plains at areas at 15,000 meters depth, we almost know nothing about biodiversity. Most of the records that we have are basically DNA, which are very valuable, but they don't tell us where very precisely where the organism is. So most of the information is still lacking. And as you know, we have the BBNJ agreement, which is supposed to contribute to the conservation of these habitats, but we still know so little about them that it's difficult to act in a precise way to preserve them. If we don't know something, it's very difficult to propose adequate measures for conservation.
What's the BBNJ agreement?
It's the biological beyond national jurisdiction. Is the agreement has been approved recently by the United Nations. It's an incredible step forward in terms of governance, of ocean governance, and will allow the implementation of marine protected areas in international waters. But in many areas, we don't know what is there. So it's difficult to protect something that you don't even know. Which is the dynamics of those deep ecosystems. We are beginning to understand it.
Rafael Gonzalez-Quiros is joint coordinator of an international body of ocean experts and co-author of the Third World Ocean Assessment that's just been published. We'll link to that assessment at greenplanetmonitor.net. And we'll also post our complete conversation. That's it for today's GPM, a joint production of Earth Chronicle Productions and 93.3 CFMU-FM, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. Thanks to our news editor, Kylie Wong. Listen to, read, and watch more Earth stories at greenplanetmonitor.net. You can also find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Blueberry, and on Canada's Harbinger Media Network. I'm David Kattenberg. Over and out. For now.
Listening to CJSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Does it feel to you like AI is taking over? That the bots are winning? That AI actually stands for alarmingly invasive? If you crave more human connection, reach out to friends, play with your children, call your mom, and do what you're doing right now. Listen. to the radio. Radio is thankfully imperfectly human. No ifs, ands, or buts.